And so I'm really delighted. I wanted to be able to see y'all, but I mean, I know I can switch over, which I think I'll do. There we go. So I can see at least a few more of you. So I just want to start today by doing a land and ancestor acknowledgement. I'm going to dedicate this time together, and if you'd like to, you're welcome to dedicate this time together to alleviating the suffering of all beings. I had to look up the indigenous people of Mexico that are here, that are where I am. I recognize the Chichimeca and Otomi people in Mexico, the Dakota and Anishinaabe people in Minnesota, whose descendants are still here and whose lands I occupy. I offer my deep gratitude for our Eastern Indian and Chinese and Japanese spiritual ancestors, for all they have given us and continue to give us, for the chance to practice today. I stand with the Black community who have suffered the loss of the Rondo neighborhood and all Black and Brown people that continue to be in the midst of horrific racism. We are connected. May we work together for the liberation of all beings. And I don't know if you all know the Jizo mantra, but I love one of my the most effective prayers I know is help. And sometimes when I do the Jizo mantra, it's that it go it's ka ka kabi san ma e soa ka ka kabi san ma e soa ka ka kabi san ma e soa ka. So thank you all. So the name of this talk is Zazen, the Foundation for Happiness. Most people that I talk to, when I tell them I do Zen stuff, they say, "Oh, I can't meditate. I can't do that. I can't get my mind to stay still." And I say, "Don't worry about your mind. I believe that Zazen, the seated meditation, rests on the four Bodhisattva vows. Just to remember, to remind y'all, the four Bodhisattva vows are: beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it." So when I first started doing Zen, I had a hard time connecting, like, what are we doing Zen-wise, and how does that connect to the how does it connect to the Four Noble Truths? And anyway, I kind of thought the Four Noble Truths were a little bit depressing. I thought it was more like we're saying life is horrible and too bad. And that's not what they're saying at all. What they're saying is suffering is present and there is a way to get relief from suffering. And so in Shohaku Okamura's book, Living by Vow, he talks about how the original variation of the four vows were directly linked to the Bodhisattva vows were directly linked to the Four Noble Truths. And so I want to tell those two now. I vow to, maybe I should say the Four Noble Truths first. So the Four Noble Truths are: there's a truth of suffering, the dissatisfaction in life. The second noble truth is the truth of suffering, the creation of suffering is from this endless thirst or delusive desires, that there's always that grasping, I'm always trying to get something more. The third of the noble truths is that there is relief from suffering. There's the possibility of relief from suffering. And the fourth noble truth is the way to that is through the Eightfold Path. So here are the other very the closer variation. I vow to enable people to be released from the truth of suffering. I vow to enable people to understand the truth of the origin of suffering. Third is, I vow to enable people to peacefully settle down in the truth of the path leading to cessation of suffering. I vow to enable people to enter the cessation of suffering that is nirvana, to settle down into that space that is nirvana. So in Zen, we spend a lot of time sitting, right? In Sesshin, we sit, we encourage to sit in the morning and the evening, or at least that's how I was first taught, was sit, you know, in the morning and the evening. And maybe that just comes from way back in the yogic tradition when I sat in the morning and the evening, but I still try to do it every day. And often in my practice of meditation before Zen, and even sometimes still, I just want to feel better. I just want, it's in that sitting, like I want some relief from suffering. The strange thing is, or the ironic thing is that if I sit down and I don't know, if I try really hard to like have some sort of certain state, or if I sometimes, you know, I came from a history of doing a lot of mantras, you know, and I always thought it was odd that we do the chanting after we meditate in Zen, but that's just what we do. And sometimes that does settle down the mind, but that seeking after some certain state keeps me kind of trapped. It keeps me kind of not being able to be with what is. So in Dogen's Fuken Zazenge, he talks about what do we do when we meditate. He gives certain kind of pointers, things that we want to be with. And I think I'm just going to go ahead and read it, maybe just settle in. You can maybe let it wash over you. This is from Ehe Dogen, who was the original founder of Soto Zen. And I just want to take a moment to make sure. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because sometimes I get all excited and I talk really fast and I drop the bottom of the phrases. So I just want to make sure everybody's with me. So I and also the thing that we do too, which I think is really funny, is that when we're in Sesshin, usually we chant the Fuken Zazenge together at the end of the day. So the first time I went to Sesshin, and I said, this is the instructions on meditation, right? I was like, what are we doing? Like, why didn't you tell me this before? I would have known what to do. Right? So anyway, here we go. So for practicing Zen, quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Put aside all involvements and suspend all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not judge true or false. So isn't that always what's happening? Like when I'm sitting and, you know, when I'm sitting, a thought will come and I'll be like, bad thought. Oh, or some happy thing will come and I'll be like, oh, good thought. You know, so there's always that going on. Do not judge true or false. Give up the operations of the mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring with thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. How could that be limited to sitting or lying down? At your sitting place, spread out a thick mat, put a cushion on it, sit either in full lotus or half lotus. You know, I can't really sit in full lotus. I sometimes have been able to sit in half lotus, and what happens is that sometimes I mess up my hips when I do that. So I just sit in a way where I can have an upright spine. He goes on to say, place your left foot on your right thigh. In half lotus, simply place your left foot on your right thigh. Tie your robes loosely and arrange them neatly. Then place your right hand on your left leg and your left hand on your right palm, thumb tips lightly touching. Straighten your body. Sit upright, leaning neither left nor right, neither forward nor backward. Align your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. Rest the tip of your tongue against the front of the roof of your mouth. Teeth together and lips shut. Always keep your eyes open and breathe softly through your nose. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a deep breath And exhale, rock your body right and left. Settle into steady, immovable sitting. Think of not thinking. Not thinking, what kind of thinking is that? I'm not going to do the whole thing, but here we go. Seated. So you have a stable foundation. Your robes neatly and gently. Body straightened and sit upright. Hands, cosmic mudra. I like this thing. I heard about the cosmic mudra one time, and I think it was a Rinzai. I think it was a Rinzai film, but I still like it. That, you know, when you place it kind of near your navel, I love that I love the idea of it being an umbilical cord to the universe. I just think that's so fun. Like, I love that idea. Then align your ears with your shoulders. That's another way to like keep your heart open. Your nose aligned with your navel, rest the tip of your tongue on the front of the roof of your mouth, teeth together and lips stuck. So I sometimes with the teeth, sometimes I don't close my teeth because that tends to make me want to grit my teeth, makes me want to kind of keep it really tight. So again, some of this I think is like, these are the general instructions. Do what works for you. Eyes always open, but open, but not grasping. Open, but not grasping. Breathe softly through the nose. Think, not thinking, not grasping, letting go. So what Shohaku Okumura also talks about often is that Zazen is good for nothing, that we don't do it, again, trying to get something. The tricky thing is, though, that if we didn't get anything from Zazen, we probably wouldn't keep doing it. If we didn't, if there wasn't some benefit to Zazen, we probably wouldn't keep meditating, right? So I want you, I mean, I don't know how, I can't see everybody, but just for fun, do me a favor, wherever you are, and just do the like rock right, rock left, trying to like get kind of sit upright, maybe do the hands in the cosmic mudra, and just take a couple of breaths together. Just find this place where you kind of come into the center. And then another thing I heard, it was a friend of mine that talked about when he got instructions from Katagiri Roshi himself, and he said that he instructed him to make his armpits kind of hollow. So try that. It's kind of with the cosmic mood to try to just make your armpits kind of hollow. I think also that's a way to keep the heart opening and let your ears line up with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. And then see if you can just kind of have your eyes open, but not necessarily focusing on anything, and just take a deep breath in and then exhale fully. And then just see if you can just kind of be with yourself and those around you just for a couple of breaths together. I know I know we all just sat together to begin with. But just those simple instructions. Okay, thank you. Just those simple instructions of straightening the body, being upright. When I went and did a practice period at Ryomunji Zen Monastery in, where is it? I mean, it's just on the edge of, it's just on the edge of where Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I want to say Iowa meet.
Dorchester, Iowa.
Thank you. And Shokin was like, because I was kind of complaining about, well, my body hurts when I sit. What do I do about that? And he said, well, all pain and my problems leave me when I straighten the body up again. So what I notice is that when I'm in Zazen and whatever is happening, I mean, often what will happen is I'm sitting and then all of a sudden I realize I'm thinking, thinking, thinking. And I'm like, oh, I'm thinking, you know, so then I just come back to the breath. Or I'm sitting there and I'm like, ooh, I feel some discomfort. Now, there's a trick, because sometimes when I feel discomfort, I go ahead and adjust my posture. But often what I'll do is I'll just be like, oh, I'm not sitting up straight. I'm all hunkered over. But the whole point, I feel like, is to come to this place where I can make a space big enough to hold everything. That for me is what happens in Zazen. It is that ability when I get very quiet. And we do have a session, I believe, coming up pretty soon at the end of the month. And what happens over a period of time, and when you can do it with other people, like in a meditation retreat where you're with people over a long period of time and you get to sit multiple areas during the day, is that what happens is that the if you're lucky, the mind is able to settle down, and I'm able to see things, I think, more clearly the way they actually are. A lot of what happens in a lot of, like how that the second Bodhisattva vow is delusions are without end. They're innumerable. I vow to end them. There's so many ways that I can and do. I've tricked myself is the right word, but I see things not the way they are. I see things with kind of my ego, my egocentric self in the middle, like people are doing something to me. And then when I realize that life is just happening, and then I can just t make the appropriate response, that is freedom. So for me, Zazen creates the kind of stable base that from which I can come and be able to see life more clearly. So, I want to talk a little bit about Case 51 from Blue Cliff Record, and I'll be quoting Katagiri Roshi's talk on this, and which Kikkon Howard has graciously transcribed the talk. And it's just I want to highly recommend that you check it out, the Katagiri Trans I think it's Katagiri Transcript Project. Because what's so cool is you can click on the talk and hear Katagiri talking and read it at the same time. Super powerful. I just found that to be really, really powerful. So in his talk in Case 20, he talked about how people, they sit and they're like, they feel nothing. They're like, they get a little bit bored because it's just sitting. I mean, and that's the point, is to just sit. There's nothing there. Otherwise, he talks about how sometimes what we do in meditation is spiritual fascination. Like we want some altered state. He also talks about making our practice mature, meeting the world with a series of undisturbed thoughts. If we can meet the world with a series of undisturbed thoughts, the world meets us in the same way. By contrast, if I meet the world with a series of disturbed thoughts, that's the way I see the world as well. So I'm going to read a little bit of the case. So there's this tradition of young monks going to see old monks. This is about Shui Feng, or Seppo in Japanese. He lived from 822 to 908. So there's this tradition of young monks going to see old monks. So there's a story of these two monks going to see Shui Feng. He's in a hut out in the middle of nowhere. The country at the time was in unrest. So it was monks had to go into hiding, kind of like me. Like I left the country because I'm afraid for my safety. I wish I could bring you all with me. Any rate, two monks came to Shui Feng. And he saw them approaching, and he opened the door to his hut, and he said, "What is it?" And one of the monks repeated, "What is it?" Old Shui Feng lowered his head, and he went back in the hut. So I wonder what's happening there. There's so many possible layers, right? So, I mean, Shui Feng, I mean, he might have been, if he's an old guy, he might have been taking a nap. I have become very fond of naps myself. So he might have been taking a nap and he heard these people clomping around. He's like, "Oh man, what is it?" And he opened the door and he said, "What is it?" And then the young monk said, "What is it?" And then they just left. They were, and then he went back in the hut and didn't say anything. Like, I don't have any time for them. I just think it's so interesting. And then these monks, they went to go see another monk and he said, "Well, have you ever gone to see Shui Feng?" And they were like, "Well, yeah, I did." He's like, "Well, what did he say?" Then he told them the story. And then this monk was like, "Well, I sure wish I could have had a chance to talk to him." At any rate, I believe. So I have asked people, I've asked teachers. I remember last year in the retreat that, Fish gave, Flying Fish. She's a priest, connected with clouds, and now she lives on the West Coast. But I went in last year during her retreat, and I'm like, okay, tell me the absolute truth. Tell me the absolute truth, like no bullshit. Like, just don't be winging. Don't be saying some kind of weird thing about it. Just tell me what is the real truth. And I don't remember what she said, but I don't think it wasn't a very satisfactory answer. And the thing is, you that it can't. What it is, like, what is it? What is it? What is the real truth? The real truth, what it is, it can't be said. You know, I thought for years I just felt like Zen people were just being evasive. You know, when you try to explain these things or you have these stories, it's like, all right, why won't you just tell me? And it's like, well, because it can't exactly be said. Maybe it can be experienced for like a millisecond on the cushion. Maybe as I mature my practice and take that steadiness out of Zazen into my life, maybe I can see what's actually happening and have the appropriate response in my daily life. I remember one of the first, I think it might have been the first session I did at Hokkyoji. I highly recommend going to Hokkyoji, man. It is super beautiful there. So I was there, and you know, I had been doing Zazen all day, and I was going back. I was actually at the time I was back in this little cabin. And as I'm walking back into the cabin, I see this snake, like right as I am about to go in the doorway. And I just said, I didn't like freak out or anything. I just saw the snake, and I'm like, oh, hello, little snake. Goodbye. You need to go now. And then the snake just went away. And then I walked into the and it was just so it was so cool. I mean, a thing happens sometimes, you know, when I sit, that I'm able to see the beauty of the world more clearly. Like, I'm able to see that the sky is beautiful. I'm able to see that the clouds are beautiful. I'm able to see that the flowers are beautiful. I'm able to see that my friends are beautiful. But when I'm in that state where there's always this discursive, something's going on, and I'm always, there's this expression they have, I heard, it says, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. You know, I mean, it's that thing of like, no matter what happens, I'm trying to defend myself, or I'm trying to like make myself look better, or I want you to think well of me. I mean, all of that, you know, and like when I sit, sometimes actually all that stuff goes away, and I realize, oh, you know what? I'm just fine. Everything's just fine. Everything's okay. All right. So the story goes on. And it's kind of long, but I want to read for you. I didn't talk as long as I thought I was going to talk, but I can talk more. But what I might do is I'm going to read the verse, which I think is really great, and I'm going to sing a song, and then we can open it up for a conversation. But so this is the verse that is in the Blue Cliff record. The last word is spoken for you. The time of light and dark, pair by pair. Born of the same lineage, they share the knowledge. Dying of different lineages, they are utterly separated. Utterly separated. Even Yellowhead Buddha and Blue Eyes Bodhidharma. South, north, east, west. Let us return. Let us return. And in the depths of night, together, look at the snow and the thousand crags. So I really can't get better than this verse, but I'm going to read you what I wrote about this anyway. What is it? What is it? It can't be said with all the dread in my heart, in my head. What is it? Said the monk in the hut as he came out, lowered his head, and went back in. Am I even worthy to ask these questions? To live this life of vow, digging deep, And then abandoning my shovel here, all the while, seen and unseen. What is it? What is it? I was taking a nap. Just relax. And it might appear under your feet. Let go of the fear. Come back to the foundation of Zazen. Be right here. Just sit. Letting go. Letting go. Letting go. All right. I'm going to sing a song. I'm on my phone, so I don't know how that's going to be as far as sound, you know, because usually what I have to do on my computer is turn the original sound on. So we'll see how it goes. I'm going to just see if there's an option for the sound. So bear with me just a second. See if I can figure something out. Oops. Sound. Well, if somebody wrote me a note, I don't know what it was. I can't really. Let me just see. Yeah. I guess I'll just have to do it later. Okay, so this is called Maybe If I. It's a song I wrote back in 2001. Let me get a drink of water here quick. I think it's so cool how the meaning of songs and the meaning of life just kind of continues to unfold. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play my guitar for a couple of licks, and then I'm gonna stop and see if, and I'm gonna ask you if you can hear it. Sorry, I have to take these out. All right. Sorry.
We can't hear it.
Bear with me a second here. Okay. Here it is. Can y'all hear that okay?
No, no, not at all.
Dang it.
Nick, we'll have to let it go.
Oh, that's like, it's so pretty.
You're gonna sing the song.
Oh, no.
If you put your AirPods, put your AirPods in the case.
All right, let me try it again.
Because it's using noise canceling. Oh, put your AirPods in the case.
Am I muted? Surely I'm not muted, am I?
No.
Sound on.
So he's on his phone, so it's hard to really use Zoom
control. We having technical difficulties. Can y'all hear me talk still?
Yes.
No, you can't hear me talk. Okay, you can hear me talk though, right?
Yes.
Can y'all hear me talk?
Yes.
Yes.
But you don't have
you. Okay. Well, okay, I guess I'll just have to read you the lyrics then.
Oh, can you sing them a cappella?
So it says, maybe if I sing, I can find it. Maybe there's a way. Maybe if I sing, I can feel it. Like a blind man in a cave. Searching for the warmth of the sun. Longing for the depth of love. Hoping for a glimpse of grace. To guide me on my way. To guide me on my way. Maybe if I dance, I can find it. Maybe there's a way. Maybe if I dance, I can feel it brush across my face, searching for the depth of love, longing for the truth, hoping for a glimpse of grace to guide me on my way. To guide me on my way. Maybe if I love, I can find it. Maybe there's a way. Maybe if I love, I can feel it. Brush across my heart, searching for the warmth of the sun, longing for the depth of love, hoping for a glimpse of grace to guide me on my way. To guide me on my way. All right, I'm gonna put my ears in so I can hear y'all. And I know it's kind of early-ish, I always kind of think anything more than much. So if you guys have any thoughts or comments or anything you want to ask or say, let me know.
How's Mexico eating you?
Somebody wants to know.
How's Mexico? I love Mexico. I mean, it's real. So I came here kind of as a refuge, right? I mean, and it's actually turned out to be super awesome. The people are awesome. It's beautiful here. There are a couple of people that are actually online with me today from Mexico. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So far so good. Yes. Yeah, so far so good. I haven't quite figured out the Zen thing here, but it's really good. I'm
Where
really
are you
grateful.
Located? Where are you located?
I'm in San Miguel de Allende, which is about 3.5-4 hours north of Mexico City.
Oh yeah.
Hey Magda, I'm so happy to see y'all. And I can't remember what Magda, what did you say? What did you tell me I should say? I should talk about uncertainty, maybe diving off that. Yeah, go ahead. But just say it.
Hi everyone. Can everyone hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, well, I wrote something in the chat about thanking Tyson to include the indigenous people in the dedication, because there was a horrific genocide when the Spanish arrived, and you know the discrimination is still going on. So thank you for including that. I also want to ask you about your practice in San Miguel. I've been in San Miguel a couple of times, and I know that there is a meditation center. It's not a Zen center, but it's a meditation center. So I'm just wondering, how is it going with you? Because I'm considering San Miguel as a potential place for retirement. I still don't know, but I just want to know how it is for you to be a refugee and still embrace Zazen in Zen.
Thank you. So it's really interesting. The people at the meditation center are really lovely. I mean, they've kept this meditation center going for, I don't know, 20, 25 years or something like that. I don't go there every day just because like I tend to get up early. They don't start till 7, you know, so I tend to get up earlier than that and kind of have my own meditation, but I do go there a couple of times a week. It's weird. I mean, it's a little bit weird. You know, that I've dedicated the last, whatever, 14 years of my life to learning how to do this and be a Zen priest. And I'm like, what? Nobody here cares. I mean, I don't, that might be a little extreme. I care. And I do feel like, you know, there's some stuff that I'm probably be able to do, maybe not, but I try to like kind of hold it lightly. I feel like my practice is so still important in stabilizing my life and just making it where I can figure out is not maybe not the right word, but have the appropriate response to my life now. You know, it's tricky because I was like, I don't know if did I overreact, you know, by leaving, but at the same time, it was the amount of discomfort I had in my body when I was in the States was so large. I just thought I have to go. And I'm so really grateful that I could, you know, I mean, not everybody can leave. I mean, it's very uncomfortable for most people, and it's more uncomfortable for others, you know, so I don't know that I answered that, but I feel like my practice of Zazen is what's stabilizing my life and giving me a foundation from which to act. And I feel like little by little, my community here is growing. And there are just so many great people here. It's yeah. Anybody else have anybody else have a question or thought or correction?
I do have a question.
Can say who you are too.
Okay. Just go ahead.
It's Fuku. Can you see me?
I can't see you, but I can hear you.
Oh, okay. There I am. Would you make a comment on time in relationship to Zazen and the vows that we take?
Time? A relationship to time. Yes. Can I ask you a little bit more about your what you mean by that? Mm-hmm. What part of time you're thinking about?
So you know, in human time, when we make a promise, you know, varies human to human, but usually we want that fulfilled in a month or so, in my opinion. So a thought crosses my mind that we have many good practitioners taking these vows and sitting. Maybe things are getting worse. Maybe things aren't changing the way we want them to change. Expectations aren't being met. And so I have heard, and I agree, it has something to do with time and how we measure time.
Ah.
I was wondering how you feel about that.
Okay, I just want to make sure I was on. So I can really only answer that from my own experience, because I don't really, you know, that there's a whole fascicle on time being, you know, with Dogen, and I don't really understand it. What I'll tell you from my own experience. So there's two or three different pieces to time that I can address. One is in relationship, as you were talking about, to expectations, like the expectations that I had for myself that by now I should be further along. By now I should be kind of more enlightened, right? So I started meditating back in 1983, you know, kind of in the yogic tradition. So that's 40 something years ago. You know, I started Zazen, I started doing meditation in a more Buddhist tradition, you know, in 2011. Okay, so that's what, 14 years ago. I feel like what I really love about Zazen, what I really love about Soto Zen, what I really love about Clouds and Water, what I really love and appreciate about my teacher Sosan, is that it's not about trying to get some. It's over time. It's what it happens over time. What happens, like just the repetition of my daily practice, my daily integrating into my life. What happens is the way that it settles me down. Now you can ask Tom, who lives with me. I still can be reactive. You know, I can still, you know, lash out if something doesn't go my way. I wish I weren't like that. That's the reason I got into doing Zen, was I thought, oh, I've been sober for 30 years. I've been meditating. You know, like at the time I was like, what that, why am I still such a jerk? I mean, I wonder that still sometimes, why am I still such a jerk? But the thing is that I have a way to make it right. You know, I have a way, like if closely examining my life, and then how am I doing with the precepts? You know, that's why it's not just like the sitting, it's sitting, but it's this with the foundation of, it's with the foundation of the precepts, with the foundation of taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's the whole thing. It's sort of like why I feel like, yes, I am a priest here in Mexico, and it's kind of hard to be a priest without a Sangha. You know, I need all of it. Now, one way to look at it is the world is my Sangha, which is true, but it's really hard. It's really hard to have these realizations by myself, which is really ironic because the Buddha allegedly, you know, sat under the Bodhi tree by himself. However, he talks about in the first case, I can't remember the name of the book, but it talks about the enlightenment of the Buddha. And he said, I, together with all beings, realize the way. So the Buddha's self didn't realize it by himself. He realized it with all beings together. So then the other piece, sometimes I think, because I wonder about time, I wonder, you know, there's a thing, I don't know if you say it in Jukai, but I know I said it when I ordained, and I said it after transmission, was the life, will you keep following this path lifetime after lifetime? And even though as Buddhists, and I think that the Buddha himself refused to talk about reincarnation, you know, but there's this lifetime after lifetime. For me, I think about even in this life, this very lifetime I live now, I've had so many variations of lifetimes. I've had so many, like, you know, I had the time when I was a kid growing up. I had the time when I was in, you know, I had the time when I lived in Wisconsin. Time when I was in business. I had the time when I, you know, like, there are all kinds of iterations of life that I have. So a lifetime after lifetime. And I wonder sometimes if maybe I've done this before in another lifetime, because it feels so familiar, because it feels so like, oh, wow, this feels so right. So anyway, that was a long answer. Did that help at all?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Tyson. It's Mio Own.
Hi, Mio Own.
So I have a couple of supportive things to say, and then I have a question from your talk. So you said, I wish you were all there with me.
Mm.
And we are.
Mm.
And I've also found that being a priest and having the vows that I've taken in front of the Sangha and with other people witnessing don't require any of the accoutrements. I think Dogen talks about you don't need incense and you don't need this and that, and that it's just you beyond all this, these party clothes and stuff we have. So that was the other encouragement I wanted to offer. Mm-hmm. So you said something, I think it was from the koan, that said something about different lineages separate people. And I was like, because in the Fukan Zengi, it also says there's 100 variations and 10,000 this, and but everybody just sits in Zazen. And so there's so many different ways, seemingly, but then there is just like the sitting down, no matter how you're expressing it. So I was wondering if you can comment on that.
There are two ways that I'll answer that. One is, that was a very tiny piece of the verse that's from the Blue Cliff Record. So right. I would refer you back to Katagiri Roshi's second talk on case 51, because he goes into much more detail about the verse. The way that I interpret that verse is this. Because what it's talking about is Shui Feng, and I can't remember the other fellow's name. My impression is that they were Dharma brothers, you know, just like me and Kikan, you know, they were Dharma brothers. And then they had their own realizations. That's the way I look at it. Actually, I might ask Kikan about the answers to this. So that's how I interpret it. But I don't really know exactly what it means.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kikan, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, offhand, I think that the talk about separation and sameness that we're referring to in the verse is ultimately the same as what Dogen is talking about in Fukan Zazengi. It's very basic Zen stuff. It's separation and harmony, or not separation and unity, right? The harmony of separation and unity.
Right, light and dark. Same thing. Exactly.
Yeah, light and dark comes up. Mm-hmm.
Well. Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you say a little bit about your experience with coming from yogic tradition? For me, that's sometimes very confusing. I sit and then my personal mantra comes in and it's just pain. So it can be a little bit confusing.
Yes, I don't know who asked. Is this somebody in Clouds?
Maya? Yeah. Yes.
Oh, hi, Maya. Thanks for asking. So I'll tell you a story about that. And this is my opinion. this is not the official Soto Zen way. This is just my experience. So I don't, so you can ask Sosan or somebody else for more information, but this is my experience. So what I did because I came from the yogic tradition, and we chanted mantras a lot. And so what I said was, when I started Zen, I was like, I'm going to take all the stuff that I learned or that I experienced as best I can, and I'm going to put it over here to the side. And I'm going to make myself open to whatever this tradition is, this Buddhist Soto Zen tradition. And so then I followed it really, really strongly. And I learned the things, and I learned the mind, and I learned the chants. And then I went for a 4-month on-go at Zen Mountain Monastery. And so, you know, I'm having a hard time on the cushion. It's like session or something. And I'm in some, you know, I'm having, I got emotional stuff coming up. I got physical stuff coming up. I mean, I got stuff coming up. And I go in and I ask the main abbot, like, what do I do with this? I'm having a hard time. And he gives me a mantra. He gives me what they say at the end of Zazen. May all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May all beings know happiness and the root of happiness. May all beings live in sympathetic joy, rejoicing in the happiness of others. May all beings live in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and delusion. So he says, you know, use that to help you. And I thought, I got back on the cushion, and I thought, if I'm going to do a mantra, I'm going to do a mantra, you know? So I mean, it was just this sort of desperation. So I did the mantra that I learned, and it helped me. And I guess what I learned from that is it's not, how do I say it? It's not, it's different, but it's not necessarily separate. So I know, and sometimes still, you know, like the mantras that I've done for like, they, sometimes those will just arise spontaneously. And what I do with it now is I just, again, like I say, I feel like the point or the idea of Zazen is to make things bigger, to create, and my practice is to create a greater capacity to hold everything. And so my other experience about using a mantra is it's a kind of focusing in, of getting really narrow and blocking everything out. So that may not be your experience. And I just would say, I keep trying to make space for all of it. But it's kind of tricky because I do consider myself a Buddhist. Now it's taken me how many years? Probably 14 years to like own that. Like, yes, I am a Buddhist. Yes. I mean, even after I ordained, like I'm in a group and we were like, do you call yourself a Buddhist? I think it's kind of hilarious. And I'm like, yes, I call myself a Buddhist. Even when I went, so on my, I got a visa for here for Mexico. And they asked me, cause I didn't fill it out to begin with. They're like, what's your religion? And I'm like, oh crap. And I was like, I was like Budismo. I mean, you know, I mean, I was like, I, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to own it. You know, I'm here as a refugee. I mean, I might as well just own who I am. So, but it's in that fear of like, you know, like, oh, I don't want to get hurt. So at any rate, that was kind of a long answer. Did that help?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Thank you, Taizong.
All right. Thank you, everybody.